Well, I don't usually have huge anxiety about sermons and sermon titles, but I got to tell you, this one gave me pause, because any time you put in the title the word bore or boring or boredom, it may not be a marketing gem. I mean, that may not be the way to get the most people into the room if you promise to talk about boredom. And yet, bless you, that is part and only part of what I want to talk about, and that is the religious experience and how services create a religious experience or sometimes distract from the experiences that we could be having together. And I think the together is a very important part of it, because you can certainly have religious experiences alone. You can have religious experiences with family. I was talking with somebody yesterday who said that his religious experience is simply to go to the ocean and to sit there and to have a sense of the infinite power of the sea, the limitless horizon, the size of the sky, and to be involved and enveloped in all of these various elements. And I completely understand that. I don't recommend it between 10:30 and quarter of 12 on Sunday mornings, but at other times, going to the sea is a perfectly good way to have a religious experience. The questions that I want to wrestle with today, and part of them arise just from the fact of the structure of the Jewish High Holy Days, where Rosh Hashanah is an evening and then half of a day, and then the next evening and then half of a day, and then Yom Kippur is most of an evening and all of a day through sunset, is that it is impossible during that period of time to pay attention. It was probably impossible to pay close attention back in ancient times, before television and before the internet and before we became a society with chronic attention deficit disorder, where I am told that nobody can listen for more than 20 minutes to anything, that you have to do something and change something and draw people in with something dramatic. That may be true. I'll try it in about 19 minutes. No clergy person of any denomination wants to bore people. And in my view, one of the things that happens is instead what we do is we entertain people. And it's a really fine line. Are we giving performances? Does the choir give a performance that should be applauded? I'm not answering the question. Some churches and synagogues do, as a matter of their own culture, applaud everything. Well, mostly they don't applaud the collection, but they applaud almost everything else. Some don't applaud at all. Some applaud children. But that whole line between performance and worship is a very, to me, interesting line. We talk often in our society about the separation of church and state and how fuzzy those lines can be. But the separation between church, religion, and theater is another one of those, not fine lines, but a big, fat, blurry line. One of the things that happens is that religion and ritual and theater were related from the beginning. When you look at Greek plays, at Greek tragedies, they were about religion. They were about the gods. They were about how to please and appease and repent from whatever your behavior was. They were about how to be together in the world. What values were worthy of being held up to attention and to be reinforced? what actions would cause disaster in Greek theater, not simply to the individual, but to the entire city, to the entire people. And those are themes that you find in Hebrew scriptures, as well as in the gospel narrative, and certainly in the apocalyptic material. Every religious experience is, to some extent, theatrical. Every theatrical experience, almost, I can probably think of a couple of exceptions, but classically, almost every theatrical experience has a religious connotation. Whether it is the Greek tragedies or it is Hamlet dealing with the primary existential question of to be or not to be, to continue living or to end one's life, to wrestle with the issues of responsibility and the meaning of our struggle, the meaning of our efforts, the meaning of our lives and the meaning of our deaths. That's what great theater does, and that's what great religious gatherings also try to do. And I use the word try because James, in talking about varieties of religious experience, talks about how seldom you actually have a transcendent religious experience in a church. And he should know because he was mostly Unitarian. He said those religious experiences happen out in the world. They happen in nature. They happen with people coming together, and you have that transcendent connection to something larger. Often our religious services, in my view, get in the way. One of the things in modern life and modern worship is that we are afraid, and I'm talking about we clergy we, and maybe congregation we also, we're afraid of being bored. We want to be entertained. And, of course, I want to be entertaining. So I'm not putting this all on you. If you look there and you sit there like a lox, I'm not going to walk away feeling very good. So there's an interaction that goes on. But I've been to religious services, and I've seen religious services on TV that are absolutely first-rate entertainment and never give me the chance to have a religious experience, to go deep, to have a sense of connection to others reinforced, to have a sense of connection to the great mystery of existence and of life, and to have that reinforced. You can watch mega churches, and you can watch the PowerPoint presentations. You can see the mass choirs and feel their power, and there's a line again between performance and inspiration. You can see things that are run like a well-oiled machine where the congregation becomes a passive audience and much more attention is paid to what goes on the stage than what goes on in the self. Because ultimately the important thing that happens is in the self. It's in the nourishment that we find. It's in how we take that nourishment, reinforce it, give it to other people, and share it. If we're sitting there going, whoa, was that soprano great or what? I used to go, in fact, I did the newsletter for a temple for, I won't name it, but they emphasized Hollywood. And they had all kinds of wonderful actors and wonderful singers and terrific readers. I mean, really great readers. I was one of them. And I did have to take the shots and lower my voice a third, but it worked out just fine. People loved the music and loved the reading, and they were interested at every moment of the service, because the service was designed to hold their attention. I sometimes watch some of you drift. And here's the secret. I'm not offended. One of the things that somebody said a couple of weeks ago that I really loved was, you know, John, you said something during the sermon. I didn't hear the rest of the sermon because I was thinking about it. Yes. Yes, that's most of the point. That's most of the point. To create spaces for ourselves to drift. It's so interesting. One of the great mistakes I think that a lot of religions have made is translating. So far, we have heard, it was all Greek to me from Ed. We've heard some Hebrew. I'd like to give everyone an Ella Wasalam in Arabic. We don't need to understand all the words. The words can be mantras that let us go to some place where we can do our business, our religious business. Not everything that happens to us is on the cognitive and logical level. You know that I'm not going to be anti-science, I'm not going to be anti-academic, I'm not a scientist, but I am an academic. But I can tell you, the very worst course I ever took was the theory of comedy. I was so bored. They so took all of the joy out of any vaudeville routine by analyzing the content, the style, the timing to death. I took a music appreciation course and dropped out because it was affecting my ability to appreciate music. I'm all in favor of thought, but sometimes you got to go with the feelings. One of my very favorite cartoons, and I think it's on point, was a New Yorker cartoon in the 1950s where a guy's on his bended knee saying, "Oh, my darling, will you marry me?" And she says in the next panel, "Why, what did you ever see in little old me?" The next panel, he's thinking. The next panel, he's thinking. And the final panel, he's out the door. There's some things that you just let happen to your heart and let it be. There are some things that you let it wash over you and touch you. Doesn't mean never think. It doesn't mean never analyze. It doesn't mean throw out all the cognitive sciences. It means that we can, for moments at a time, go alpha. Not in the alpha male sense, but in the alpha wave sense. That we can drift. I don't mind when I see people looking like they have dropped out of the sermon. I don't even mind when their eyes are closed. I make the assumption that it's meditation. Snoring is different, but I'm not offended by snoring. Looking at your watch for the sixth time, I notice. Believe me, I notice. Shaking your watch, is this damn thing moving? Is not about you, it's about me. I know I'm not connecting. But I don't feel a responsibility to be entertaining. And our choir has a greater responsibility than to give a performance, as do our readers. And we are not giving performances when we sing together. We are giving an experience of being together. We are giving each other the experience of what it is like to be in a room and to have our voices joined and to feel that buzz that corrects us, that buzz that takes weak voices and creates strong music, that takes different pitches and different keys and creates harmony. You can't sing dissonance with 100 people. Honest, you can't. It's going to end up blending. And that's an important experience, not in our heads, but in our that somatic in terms of what it is to be connected to each other, connected to whatever the source of inspiration in our lives might be. We take worship and we use ritual, and the ritual is not magic. The ritual is simply a way that we try to bring order out of the chaos. And I emphasize, try to bring order out of the chaos. And that's not simply a religious thing. You'll see it. You'll see it in fiction. You'll see it in series where people create a world that is orderly, that gives us a sense of security. Because if everything changes, we get lost. We don't know where we are. If we came and changed the order of service radically every week, it might be tremendously creative. But it would be disorienting. I've actually run the experiments, switch sides when I spoke from a pulpit and switch the pulpit from the left side to the right side or from the... It didn't make any difference, really, in terms of... But people were upset by any kind of change. Ritual is a way that brings at least the shape of order to sometimes the chaos of our existence. Worship is a way that we come to examine ourselves and what our values are and what it is that we, in fact, value, and then we share them with each other and get the strength from each other. Yes, we can meditate alone and find out about ourselves, but to some extent, the rubber meets the road when we come into the same room together and share an experience. Given the 500 channels on television with nothing on them and the billions of websites with very little on them, we don't have water cooler experiences for the most part in our society. The exception is the Tina Fey is a water cooler experience. But where people have, I'll explain it later for those of you that missed Saturday Night Live last night, just Google Tina Fey when you get home. Those are water cooler experiences where you have shared something. We come to church partially to share an experience. You don't have to be in agreement with me. You don't have to be in agreement with the people in the talk back. But we have shared something and wrestled with the chaos together to try to find things that are worthy of our attention, of our hearts, of our hands, and of our lives. That's a wonderful, nourishing process that gives us energy to deal with a larger world that is not always amenable to change. I said that I mentioned Paul Newman. Paul Newman, good Unitarian Universalist, lived in Studio City till the big Northridge earthquake, at least part of the time, and then Joanne said, "I am so out of here," and went to Connecticut. She didn't know about Lyme disease and the Westport congregation. What's his legacy? Well, his legacy, the movies and the plays were his talent. His legacy is the hundreds of millions of dollars that he has given to the world. Being entertained is fine. That brought people to him, and then he gave something back. It's a loop. It's a loop. I talked about the Greek tragedies. You have the Eumenides, where the people feed the gods. You have the Mass, where God feeds the people. It's a loop. Not just one way, but a way of being involved with each other, with our world, with giving, with receiving, with living. And we come together to do this. We come together and sometimes we drift to a more important place. Sometimes we are amused, sometimes we laugh, sometimes we go when the choir sings and go, "Wow," and we can't help ourselves and we applaud. And that's okay. But understand that it's not a performance. And understand that you don't have to be interested at every moment. One of my greatest religious experiences was coming home from church, having done an Easter service many years ago, and the Bach B minor Mass was on television. And I lay down and I let it wash over me. I let it take me on a journey. I didn't have to understand the music. I didn't have to translate the German. I didn't have to be a Catholic or a Lutheran. I could just let it touch me. I was not paying attention on the surface. I was not bored on the inside. I was open to being touched and changed and nourished. And to do that together is a wonderful and a joyous experience.